Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, it is the 13th day of August, 2013. This is The Horn, Head On Radio Network.com, a little independent, non-commercialized, utterly shaped and formed and created by you, effort at what we like to call conversation radio. Yes, indeed. And many thanks going out this evening to those who tried to who stepped up to make things a little better than they were when they ended last night. Let's see. Our fundraising goal this evening is only $400. We're still trying to get out of the July hole and come even with August. It can be done. I firmly believe it. Paid some bills yesterday. Didn't pay all of them. So everything's all still kind of at hazard. But, you know, hopefully we'll pull it into the water. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where you go for the stream. Or on your smartphone or tablet device, you can always go to TuneIn Radio or Stitcher Internet Radio. It's Tuesday here. Like I said, the 13th of August. It's Tuesday. That means it's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. So named for the Titanic wit so frequently displayed by the right wing, most particularly back when a local right wing, 972,323 third tier blabberer not too far from here, explained to one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful that yes, there are the reason that there are fossils in the rock strata of the mountains of West Virginia, which are far, far from the sea, the reason that there are seashell fossils is because of the movement of the Titanic plates. I like to just remind people why that is, because, you know, new folks come in. That's why we have Titanic Tuesday. And oh boy, we're loaded for bear. They can't help it, can they? They just walk with wide-eyed horror through this diverse world of people of different skin colors, the right-wingers do, people of different skin colors, people of different genders, people of indeterminate gender, women doing men's work, men doing women's work, children doing adult work. Doesn't seem to bother them because, of course, they're right-wingers and Republicans, and therefore fiscally conservative. Yeah, but this one's special. You just cannot. You know, we struggle. We really do struggle to keep this little network on the air. And I guess that's how it always has been and how it always will be. And we constantly talk about fundraising. But I gotta say something off to one side. We really, really need some progressive person of vision out there to build the temple to the goddess of irony. Because if I gotta have religion in my life, the goddess of irony is my deity of choice. And my God, she's been working overtime. We go, of course. Of course, to Radio Rwanda and their Fox and Friends program, Anchor baby Michelle Malkin was on the program, and she was shocked, even horrified, I tell you, horrified, that California Governor Jerry Brown, who has been quite the fiscal conservative hawk, et cetera, well, he sort of earned a little bit of his street cred as a liberal or progressive that he had years and years ago, say way back when he was dating Linda Ronstadt. I'm so old I remember that. What was the album? Hasten Down the Wind. Linda Ronstadt album. But the panel on Fox and Friends was horrified by a bill that Governor Jerry Brown of California signed that actually allows students to choose their own gender identity. And even that, in terms of the English language, is a little bit misleading. That makes it sound like maybe Susie gets up one morning, I feel very girly today, and then gets up the next morning and, you know, pulls on a flannel shirt and trousers and says, my, I'm feeling butch. No. I don't have to, we don't have to explain to one another what transgenderism is. We don't have to explain to one another what a living hell it is to go through life. I mean, if you're straight and you are perfectly gender aligned in your straightness, cool. If you're gay and you're perfectly gender aligned in your gayness, cool. But what if you're smack dab in the middle of that Kinsey scale? And, well, you know, outside look like a boy, inside feel like a girl. Outside look like a girl, inside feel like a boy. That is a special hell for a human being. Especially in a culture that does not welcome such people. I remember long, long ago when our good friend Peter Godbold was doing his groundbreaking work on, at the time, what was the only five-day-a-week LGBT program on the internet or on terrestrial radio, Strictly Confidential. And he had, I forget her name, but she was post-op and transsexual, and she explained ever so much about gender issues, even to the point of talking about the concept of two-souled people, the two-souled concept from Native American societies, which never really caught on with the white Europeans, and more's the damn pity. So, no, people who are transgendered have an especially difficult world to live in. Because if they're honest with themselves, the world freaks out. And if they're dishonest with themselves, the world thinks that they're normal. Remember, only a setting on a dryer. And they themselves lead tortured lives of internal conflict that leads to all sorts of misery, like self-medication through booze, drugs, self-destructive behavior, and then there's what the cops do if they catch you, especially if you are male-to-female transgendered, and the things that happen in jail cells, and you get, there's probably a story a day of some transgendered person having the stuffing beaten out of them, if not killed, by some cop or some bigot, some homophobe. You know, there are even assumptions made about sexuality. It's always assumed that a transgendered male is gay, which ain't necessarily the case. Fox News, Radio Rwanda, Fox and Friends, Michelle Malkin, and a discussion among these well-paid people who I am sure are perfectly well-adjusted, normal, sexually kind of, nobody ever goes home and thinks about feet. Or pinkies. Or really manly, rough blue jeans or satin panties. Nobody ever does any of that. Sorry, Marty, you lose. You're going to get audio. Because like I said, when I began this little diatribe, this all has to do with the goddess of irony. So there's a law in California. Governor Jerry Brown signed it into law. And in California now, If you are a girl who feels like she is trapped in a boy's body, or a boy who feels like she's in a girl's body, legally within the state of California, and you're a student, you can choose your gender and expect to be respected, expect your choice of gender, your recognition of your own gender to be respected by the school. And Clayton Morris and Michelle Malkin and whoever the Fox and Friends attack blonde is, well, they're having a hissy. But thank you, Goddess of Irony. Thank you for one. There's always one particular line, one particular sentence, one particular reference that lets you know that the Goddess of Irony is on the job.
California Governor Jerry Brown signing a controversial new law designed to protect transgender students.
Okay, why is there a siren behind California Governor Jerry Brown signed a law protecting transgender students? Why is that? Because it's a graphic from the Fox News Radio Rwanda Fox and Friends font generating department called PC Police. See, we have to respect people about what they think their genders are, because it's not politically correct not to do so. So that way the nonagenarians watching Fox, well, Eunice, I don't understand you. Wait, Eunice? You mean all these years you were wearing those chaps that hadn't nothing to do with you wanting to have a hobby raising livestock? Oh, Eunice, get me my pill. Right? PC Police. That, you know, whether it's somebody saying the N-word who ought not, or somebody saying the F-word or the Q-word or the D-word or the... Well, if you tell somebody they ought not say it because it's impolite, rude, and shows that you're a cretin from several millennia back who couldn't be trusted to pluck their own eyebrow into two... Well, you're being persecuted because you're not politically correct. Go F me. So that's where the siren comes from.
Students in the state's public schools.
It gives kids the right to choose what bathroom they'll use and the choice of boy sports or girl sports. And while supporters say this law will cut...
Jesus Christ, civilization will come to a crashing halt. They can choose to play boy sports or girl sports and choose which bathroom to go potty in? Oh, Fox is on the job, and Fox is worried. Can they choose which bathroom they're going to go to listen to Lee Greenwood sing God Bless the USA? Do little transgendered girls respond? Do they still have to put their hand over their heart when we say the Pledge of Allegiance? And what if they don't say under God? You get the idea. Oh, but do go on, DoFi. That DoFi is the... We talked about millennia. Yeah, DoFi. DoFi, actually. We pronounce the I as E, as most European languages do, not I. DoFi is plural for Latin doofus, which isn't Latin at all, but we're just trying to maintain a little consistency here.
Down on bullying, opponents say the negative...
Okay, so they're confessing it'll cut down on bullying?
Kids the right to choose what bathroom they'll use and the choice of boy sports or girl sports. And while supporters say this law will cut down on bullying, opponents say the negatives far outweigh the positive. Joining us now, Fox News...
Yeah, they won't be gender-conforming, and pretty soon you'll have football players standing with feathered boas on the far sidelines and cheerleaders in astronaut suits. And what happened to my culture?
Contributor Michelle Malkin. I don't know where to start on this.
He's confused. He doesn't know where to start on this, Michelle. Goddamn, can you get us started, Michelle, please? Because he doesn't know where to. I know I'm going to play Michelle Malkin. And I know I'm not going to be okay. But well, strap in, tennis. We go through about a case of tennis balls a month here, and you don't want to know about the duct tape. Because, of course, we use more tennis balls and duct tape here because I have to listen to this stuff beforehand, usually two or three times. Oh, by the way, the attack blonde in question is Gretchen Carlson, not Megyn Kelly, who has just kicked Sean Hannity out of a job. Oh! But anyway, Gretchen Carlson is your attack blonde in question.
Michelle, great to have you in the studio this morning, because there seems to be so many questions around this. Is this children who...
Hold on. I guess one of the big raps on me is that I can't get through a sound clip. Time. Time out. Jack, time out, okay? What qualifies Michelle Malkin as an expert on gender or sexuality? I'll take nothing for a million, Alex. But nonetheless, you know, she was in the Rolodex. Kind of like on the Sunday programs, as we mentioned on More and Monday last night, kind of like the way that for some reason or another, Steve King, Donald Trump, and who was the other one? Oh, Louie Gohmert are in the Rolodex at the booking offices of Meet the Prestitutes and This Week with George Snuffleupagus the CBS This Nation or what, John McCain. Yeah. They're just in the Rolodex. What do you got to do to get into the Rolodex? But Michelle Malkin, a sexuality expert, Michelle Malkin, a gender pundit. Well, thank God she's there to tell the nonagenarians how to feel about all this. You know how this is going to work out, right? Not well.
Consider themselves a different gender?
Wait, what's the question? What's the question, Doofus?
Negatives far outweigh the positive. Joining us now, Fox News contributor Michelle Malkin. I don't know where to start on this, Michelle. Great to have you in the studio.
No idea.
Because there seems to be so many questions around this. Is this children who consider themselves a different gender and have not gone through some sort of surgery?
Michelle, do you have any children at all? Have you ever watched a child struggle with gender identity issues, Michelle? Or do you spend most of your time peeking over the windowsills of little boys who are happy to have the CHIPS program? Tell us about it, Michelle. Do the children have surgery, Michelle? What happens to their little pee-pees, Michelle?
Children who consider themselves a different gender and have not...
See, there's that... Language! You know how the right-wing fundies like to say, you know, sexuality is a choice. I woke up this morning and just decided I was going to be heterosexual. Yeah, tomorrow morning I may wake up and decide I need a man in my mouth. It's a choice. It is. It's a choice. Well, the same thing here. Because they consider themselves... See, with little tiny, you know, Eunice and Emery are sitting at home in the Barca loungers, and they're 94, and they hear words like, do they consider themselves? No, you dipstick! They don't consider themselves. They are. Different verb. I am, you are, he, she, it is, we are, you are, they are. Present tense, active voice, the verb to be. This has to do with the essential ability of children and later on, oddly enough, adults to be who they are. Not consider. What a twit.
Children who consider themselves a different gender and have not gone through some sort of surgery? Is it a child who is conflicted about their sexuality and who chooses one day to use a boy's bathroom as opposed to a girl's? I mean, this is a difficult situation.
It is difficult to be that damn stupid, cash a paycheck, show up for work every day, and breathe in and breathe out all at the same time. I mean, yeah, what about the bathrooms? Jesus Christ! I don't even know who this doofus is, but doesn't the potty fixation tend to sort of sort itself out by the time you're about four? But Roger Ailes or Rupert Murdoch or whomever is still cutting a check to a guy who's getting big money to worry about what happens in the potty. And he's asking Michelle Malkin. If you got potty questions, why not ask David Vitter, for Christ's sakes? I warned you about the caffeine last night. I can tell you I'm about two-thirds of the way down in a green tea with honey. And, well, my apologies. But it ain't going to get much better. And we're only 42 seconds into a three-minute clip. Oh, dear.
For families who are dealing with children who feel this way. But it seems to me there are a lot of questions still unanswered.
There are a lot of questions still unanswered. Lots of questions. What are they going to do in the potty?
It's fraught with questions. And
Fraught, I tell you, fraught. I want... ophthalmologically fraught. Fraught with questions. Hey, you hear it, Eunice? We got some frotting going on Fox.
Fortunately, I don't think there was enough of this debate.
Oh, no, there wasn't enough debate. Son of a gun, there wasn't enough debate. There wasn't anybody in there talking about how they need to conform to their gender norms, damn it! Marty pointing out, after manifesting his absolute disgust with me for playing this audio in the first place, either it's a choice or you are how Plainsworth made you. Be happy with it. I know, Randy. Sorry, Bob, but listening to Fox News is about as annoying as listening to the worst type of commercial. I'd say it's more annoying. But remember, I don't just do things. This has a purpose. Remember, this is a man. This is going to wind up being an homage to the goddess of irony. Jeremy writing in, ugh, you're doing it again. Two rolls of duct tape and at least three tennis balls, please. Hey, thank you, Henry, and thank you, Thomas, and thank you, Betsy. For getting us started today, fundraising-wise, much appreciated. It really, really does help. Thank you, Lib, from last night. Marty, you're angering Radio Rwanda. Got some stream buffering. Not on my end, I don't. Everything's just peachy keen here, Marty. So, let's see. Yeah, down to 360. 36 more folks, $10 a piece. Can we do that? Good idea. Sure would be nice. But, okay, I'm sorry. We're back to being fraught and there wasn't enough debate. About what? What did you want to debate, Michelle? Whether to flay the skin off the little transgendered children or whether to burn them alive? That's the kind of debate you like, Michelle. Yeah, see, Marty noting, thank Plainsworth, I have alcohol at home. Unfortunately, I am not at home. No, it's tennis balls and duct tape, Marty, I'm telling you.
Within the Sacramento legislature before Governor Brown signed it, because there is such an impetus.
Impetus? Really? There wasn't enough debate within the legislature of California in Sacramento before Governor Brown signed it. Now, I don't know about you, but what kind of mental image does that create? Some sort of Governor Moonbeam whisking in on his private unicorn and snatching the bill away and going and signing it into law before there could be enough debate? There are rules in legislatures that determine how much debate there will be. Is Michelle Malkin saying that somehow the rules were circumvented and that there wasn't enough debate? God, people are... They're not dumber than a bag of hammers. They're dumber than the hammer handles. They're dumber than the bag. Yeah, there wasn't enough debate. You know how that translates, right? I wish they had just filibustered this damn thing to death, because, you know, I mean... I don't know what to do with these people. I'm so sexually normal. I'll bet. You probably know the names of things, Michelle, that I couldn't even describe. And I'm not talking about fraught or impetus.
To pander to political correctness, I think this is social engineering run amok.
No, you believe that. Now, see, this is where we keep getting in trouble. People transposing the word believe for the word think. There is nothing that has come out of Michelle Malkin's mouth thus far that indicates there is any thinking going on whatsoever. It's all believing. She believes there wasn't enough debate. She believes the governor signed the bill too easy. She believes it's fraught with social peril. She believes that it's social engineering run amok.
God damn it, our little boys will be wearing tutus now.
Apparently, according to the bill that was signed, transgender is defined any way they want to, as long as a child has the self-perception that they are transgender, they will be able to go into any bathroom that they want. Really, I think it's a usurpation of local parental and community control.
It's a usurpation of urination. That's what it is. It's a usurpation of urination. You see how she oversimplifies it? I've got a sneaking suspicion that legislators, working as legislators often do and legislatures as they often do, I imagine there were... Come on, anybody, Sacramento, get the newspaper, L.A., San Francisco, anybody. Were there any hearings on this? Were there any honest-to-goodness, certified, bona fide, no-kidding experts who testified about this? Is there any means by which a, for instance, child psychologist, child counselor, schooled and educated and certified in dealing with gender-related issues, is there any way that, say, mommy and daddy could take the child, you know, because, well, you know, sometimes Johnny plays with fire trucks, but sometimes he plays with Barbies. Duh. And then there's the right-wing approach, which is simply to kill the child.
I don't want him growing up to be no sissy.
Yeah, see? Perfect. Kevin pointing out. Fox political speak. If a bill is liked by Fox, 5 minutes of debate, and that's all that's needed, and it's a wildly popular bill. If a bill is something Fox doesn't like, 5 days of debate is not enough, and it's a very unpopular bill, no matter what the polls say. Because at the end of the day, this is a humane bill. I know it may come as a surprise to the folks at Fox. I talk about nonagenarians in their audience and stuff. Do you realize there are nonagenarian transgendered people? Just like there are nonagenarian gay people and nonagenarian straight people. But here's the difference between a nonagenarian transgendered person and a 5-year-old transgendered person. The bill that has been signed into law in California is designed to hopefully, make it possible for that 5-year-old not to go through the living hell that the 90-year-old went through. Because at some point along the way, an elderly transgendered person has probably been discriminated against, has probably had relationships ruined, has very well possibly developed substance problems, not because the person is transgendered, but because society, because the culture insisted that that person be a square peg or a round peg in a square hole. Because society insisted that, okay, you can march to a different drummer, I'm sorry, Aloysius, you can't be the drum majorette. And what a hell. What a living hell. And again, in a sane country, I would not be doing this story right now. Then again, in a sane country, I wouldn't be looking at my local newspaper. Standoff ends with lawyer shot. Charleston attorney expected to live after shooting himself in the head. Guy had a bunch of guns. Lawyer started working under Daryl McGraw, the good attorney general that I mentioned to you the other night. Wound up having to work for this Morrissey creep who came from New Jersey, who does. I'm the attorney general of where? West Virginia? Oh, hell yeah, I got an aunt in Roanoke. So he barricades himself in, and he's probably got other issues. And, of course, every cop in the 90-mile radius comes over, and they shut down the highways. And at some point, he just gives up and shoots himself in the head. And apparently survives. That's not a story for an actual functioning civilization either. So I'm sorry. I wish... The United States of America, and those of us who are still striving to create a more perfect union, ensure domestic tranquility, and prepare and promote and provide for the common defense. I'm sorry, we're dysfunctional. I'd like to lead today with something like President Obama declared today that it would be a cold day in hell before the Keystone XL pipeline was constructed. Or President Obama announced today that dead hillbillies are too high a price to pay for 6-inch seams of coal that wind up getting exported to Russia and India and China. I'd love to open with those stories. Holy hell, probably either one of those I wouldn't make it to the microphone because I'd be out celebrating and icing the champagne. But no, this is a dysfunctional country. This is a country that doesn't work. I mean, no, we work. We work our asses off. For less and less and less and less money, we work our asses off. This country is rapidly approaching the point of ceased to function status. If this country were a computer, every time you turned it on, the screen would be blue. Only it would be red. Jesus. Back to Michelle. Here, let's back up a little bit. I don't want us to forget anything that this genius said.
To pander to political correctness. I think this is social engineering run amok. Apparently, according to the bill that was signed, transgender is defined any way they want to, as long as a child has the self-perception that they are transgender, they will be able to go into any bathroom that they want.
Bathrooms. That's our concern here. Bathrooms. What are these gender segregationists going to start insisting that there should be male toilet paper and female toilet paper? Good God.
Really, I think it's a usurpation of local parental and community control.
Very.
Local, community, and parental control. It's a usurpation. And yet, the bill does not specify that a transgendered child has the right to come and knock on your door and insist to use your bathroom in some transgendered way in your local, in your own personal home. And yet, in the thin gray settlings between her ears that pass for brains for Michelle Malkin, it is. Community control. And that's what we need, control. Oh, goddess of irony, how I reverence you. She wants them controlled. How do you want them controlled, Michelle? Maybe a little leather? Maybe some thigh-high boots with stiletto heels? Oh, that'll control them. Ooh, right, Michelle? Yeah.
These are things that should be up to the discretion of each individual school district. And now,
right, because we need school districts in California where some children are penalized and punished and perhaps harassed and embarrassed and humiliated and maybe even beaten to death, and then we need some other school districts where they're not. Because, you know, communities are different. I mean, some communities are like the community in, what was her name? Margaret. Now, you know the story, the lottery. The lottery. But some communities are like the lottery. Lottery in June, corn heavy soon. And so you get all the adults together and all the little children, and the adults have to draw for the children who aren't able to draw for themselves, and whoever gets the black spot on the piece of paper gets stoned to death. So we'll have good crop harvests. We need community control. Of course, there, you know, the other communities, they pick a likely-looking young lad and fatten him up and let him have all the sex he wants all year long. And then at the end of the year, they flay the skin off of him, and some woman dances around in it so that there will be fertility. There are different standards in different communities, right? I mean, why should we expect there to be some sort of standardization of how a community treats some of its most fragile members?
Well, goddammit, it's the free market.
Oh, do go on, Michelle.
Now it's a mandate that affects every single classroom in California from kindergarten through 12th grade.
Oh, did you hear how she said kindergarten through 12th grade? Did she have a bad experience with a transgender person somewhere? Was there some lithe young boy who was just immensely prettier than Michelle? Kindergarten.
That's the point I was just making. It's starting in kindergarten. Five-year-olds are now, I don't know, exposed to what is transgender. Hey, Mommy.
Okay. Five-year-olds are exposed! Would you trust that? Just having heard that little bit of a... Would you trust that guy around a five-year-old? Exposed! Hey, kid, I got a raincoat. Because I wouldn't. I guess we can interrupt for a moment. Is this just shtick? Is this the stuff that gets people... I mean, is this just to sell toothpaste? Is some producer, some director, some writer... okay, we'll get Michelle Malkin on and Gretchen Carlson and the two doofy, and we'll act all shocked at the fact that there are transgendered people in the universe... And then we'll cut to commercial, and what a lovely smile you can have. Is that all this is? Or is this for real? I mean, is this guy really that dumb? Does this guy not know what it... We were doing work on the AIC Act, Ferg and I, a few months back. And I forget which congressional office was, but I was kind of pleased. Obviously, it was not a Republican office, because then the transgendered person who was working the front desk would have been closeted, and probably the congressperson, him or herself. But no, Ferg walked in to deliver a flyer and asked that it be delivered to the congressman or congresswoman. I don't know who it was anymore. I don't remember. But he walked out, and I was so proud of my son. Because at 17 years old, pick a method of expression, Bob. At 17 years of age, he didn't come out guffawing or snickering or smirking. You know what my son did? We got a few feet down the hall, and he looked at me and he said, "You know, Dad, maybe there's hope yet." I said, "Why is that?" He said, because an obviously transgendered person is the receptionist in that office, and it's and everybody was just not making a big deal out of it. I said, and you're not making a big deal out of it either, are you? No, he said, just a person doing a job. I said, my work here is done. But yeah. Meanwhile, one of the two doofi just... what is this transgender business? What is this? I do not know what this transgender is.
...of each individual school district, and now it's a mandate that affects every single classroom in California from kindergarten through 12th grade.
That's the point I was just making. It's starting in kindergarten. Five-year-olds are now, I don't know, exposed to what is transgender? Hey, Mom.
What is transgender? Hey, Mom. Yeah, ask your mother, son. Get away from me, kid. You bothered me. Yeah, why age five? Legitimate inquiry. Why H5? Because the human personality is pretty much, unless the data or the opinions or the expertise have changed since last I was learning about it, the human personality is pretty much set in stone by age five. A long time ago, that's why we didn't send kids to school until age six or age five at the earliest. Because they were still developing and, you know, we kind of wanted to respect the parents' right to deal with it. Right. But age five, well, there's tons of stories out there. Tons of them. We talked about it a couple of months ago. The child who is so happy that she's going to get to go back to school again instead of being homeschooled, because now she'll be able to use the restroom. I forget what state that was in. And all she said was, does this mean I get to go and make new friends? She's transgendered. And it's been obvious that to her parents that she is transgendered since the day that she was born. She never liked boy stuff, even though she was born biologically male.
And what we needed to do was hand her a couple of G.I. Joes and Tonka Trunks and make her play with them and make him play with them and put him in some boy clothes and if he didn't play with them, well, give him a good beating, beat some sense in and nail him up, I say.
I mean, what is transgender? Am I transgender? It's very scary. Slippery.
Am I transgender? Very scary. Is it, doofus? Hey, Mommy, what is transgender? And that's the point. And this is Eric Bowling, by the way, who has apparently all the brains of killed sphagnum peat moss. We don't know if you're transgendered, Eric. We don't know. That's something for you to sort out. If you are... I'm sorry you have to live in the closet, Eric. Come on out.
Slow.
Well, and also, we know that kids like to pull pranks.
Oh, yes, Gretchen, we do. Kids like to pull pranks. What are those prankster five-year-olds in California going to do, Gretchen?
That's what I was thinking.
This is what I'm thinking. You know, can you imagine? Not that I did anything like that. can you imagine?
Dr. Freud! Yeah, Bob. Doc, what did she mean when she said kids like to pull pranks, not that I did anything like that, and during a conversation about transgender children? Doc, what did she mean by that? Well, Bob, let me get my cigar. Doc, the damn thing stinks. Like a burning rope. You want my opinion or don't you? Well, okay. Well, you see, Bob, it's like this. Gretchen Carlson is in the middle of a conversation about a topic that is very uncomfortable for her. We must therefore understand that that is creating some sort of neurotic conflict quite possibly in her id and mit her super ego as well. I wish I had the first foggy idea of what you're saying, Doc. What I'm saying, Bob, is that Gretchen Carlson, she's probably a little bit squirrely. Not transgendered? I didn't say anything about gender. I just said she's squirrely. Thanks, Doc, for everything.
Now the boys want to go into the girls' bathroom, and the girls wanted to go into the boys' bathroom, and they can just say, oh, well, I was transgender for the moment. I mean, it's just going to cause... Teachers are already...
Yeah, right, because I was just transgendered for a moment. I had a transgendered flash. How ignorant are these people? Rhetorical question. I mean, this is a 3-minute and 4-second clip that has taken me 47 minutes to get through. A 3-minute and 4-second clip that is nothing but a grand display of the amount of ignorance that can be tolerated if you're a right winger and you look okay on camera. You can be stupid for hours on end and get a big ass paycheck on the right wing. Meanwhile, do you wonder how it is that bill in California came into being? Now, I don't have the legislative history before me. This is pure speculation, but it is an educated guess. That bill was probably driven by grassroots activists, probably mommies and daddies. Maybe some mommies and daddies who literally found their child at the end of a rope, or with a gun in their hand, or a knife at their wrists. Because they were not free enough, they were so constrained that they could not stand the lives that they had to live by virtue not of how they were born, but because how society treats them for how they were born. Born. That's how these things come into law. Mommies and daddies of 5-year-olds who know that there is nothing within the biological gender of their child that even reasonably relates to who the child is. And could we possibly mention just here at this moment that defining a person by their genital appendages or lack thereof is about as stupid as defining a person by the color of their skin, the color of their eyes, the quantity and quality of their earwax, or the amount of hair on their body? And this is a legitimate question, non-rhetorical. I wish Rick Goodner was handy. What is with the right-wing fixation of absolutely having to stereotype and gender type and race type and type? What is it with that? Why are they that way? Is it the authoritarian thing? Were they potty trained too early? Well, yeah, we're still... Well, there's Gretchen Carlson. She's still fascinated with bathrooms. We've gone from... Yeah. I don't understand. I don't understand why they can't live their own miserable, damned authoritarian lives. Well, there's good money in hate, Bob. Well, maybe that's the bottom line, isn't it? Lottie in the chat room. Correction, Bob. They're not cutting to a toothpaste commercial. They're not there to sell toothpaste. They're selling denture adhesive. Jack from Shreveport, wasn't there some right-winger that said a father should shower with his little boy to show the kid man parts? What is it with the right-winger's obsession and fixation with other people's sexuality? My question, too. And yes, it's not just some right-winger, Jack. That is no less than the Reverend James Dobson, who advised parents, specifically men, to help keep the gay away, in addition to praying the gay away, that they could help keep the gay away by taking their little boy sons, you know, about eye level with their genitals, into the shower with them and showing them what a healthy heterosexual penis looks like. Yes, the follower of Christ said that. The follower of Christ, with an Ed D. doctorate from the University of Southern California, said that. Of course, this is also the same guy who said that we need to beat children until they cry what he termed real tears. Whoop! I promise we're going to get through this. Do continue, please, Ms. Gretchen.
Oh.
Well, and also, we know the kids like to pull pranks. And,
that's what I was
thinking. This is what I'm thinking. You know, can you imagine, not that I did anything like that. can you imagine now the boys want to go into the girls' bathroom, and the girls wanted to go into the boys' bathroom, and they can just say, oh, well, I was transgender for the moment. I mean, it's just going to cause, teachers are already overburdened with disciplinary issues and trying to keep control in the classroom. I just can't get my head around
I think it's a really good point, and I think being a parent, you can see that this is going to be a liability bomb is what it's going to be, because you are going to have cases.
Can't resist that eliminationism, can you, Michelle? It's going to be a liability bomb. Oh, people, school districts will be getting sued. Oh, no, they won't be getting sued if they follow the damn law, if they don't torment little children. No, Johnny, you can't play with the Barbies. Get over there and roughhouse and rough and tumble with the boys. Cynthia! Quit rough and tumbling with the boys and get over here and play with the damn Barbies! Huh!
Where students are going to feel from the minute that the school year starts that this is an invasion of...
Wait. Here's Michelle Malkin, who... we have no evidence to suggest knows anything about getting teenagers through high school, who is suddenly speaking for every teenage high school, every school student in the United States. The hubris that attaches to these turds on two legs is astonishing. I'm trying to think. I've been at this for about 10 years, and I can't recall, maybe I did, I can't recall an instance in which I have spoken for anyone but myself. When you call in for Conversation Radio, you talk about how you think. And yes, occasionally what you believe. It takes a... My goodness gracious, one must think highly of oneself to speak for every teenager in America. And she did.
Parent, you can see that this is going to be, it's going to be a liability bomb is what it's going to be. Because you are going to have cases where students are going to feel from the minute that the school year starts that this is an invasion of their privacy. And I think that's the first thing that's going to be invoked. In fact, I think the Pacific Justice Institute has already announced that...
Oh, okay. Who? Pacific Justice Institute, please. Is that like the Population Resource Center we talked about? Pacific Justice Institute. Because, you know, there's no justice unless it's right-wing justice. What have they already announced?
They're looking for plaintiffs
to sue. How many sexual harassment cases are...
Oh, they're looking for plaintiffs to sue over this. Oh, please. Please. And students are going to feel like their privacy is being invaded. Really? I guess at the dawning of integration and desegregation, there were a lot of little lily white students who felt like that their world was collapsing before their very eyes because they were going to have to go to school with those children. And yet, a generation later, well, hell, I mean, I was a first grader at the beginning of. Integration, where I grew up, we talked about that, and it was never anything but normal. But that those first couple of years, yeah, there was trouble, and of course there's still trouble to this day with the more latent variety. But you know what? Kids adapt. 5-year-olds especially adapt well. That's why you include the little children who are transgendered in this bill. Because if you teach children to be decent human beings at a fairly early age, odds are it'll catch. But Michelle Malkin, she's worried about lawsuits.
feel from the minute that the school year starts that this is an invasion of their privacy. And I think that's the first thing that's going to be invoked. In fact, I think the Pacific Justice Institute has already announced that they're looking for plaintiffs.
How many sexual harassment cases are going to come up where he exposed himself to me? Yeah. I didn't want to see it.
Of course,
in the boys' bathroom?
Right. And there's a more basic question of, really? This is the biggest educational problem in California. Right. Yeah. The test scores are going down. There are billions of dollars in the hole in debt. And this is the priority. Thanks.
Yeah, it is a priority, Michelle, you freaking idiot. Because if you make the school experience less traumatic, maybe, just maybe, the test scores will go up. Because it won't be a hateful, terrifying, intimidating place to be every day. Just say it. We're almost done. Thank God. And we've had to wait all this time for the blessing of the goddess of irony.
That they're looking for plaintiffs.
How many sexual harassment cases are going to come up where he exposed himself to me? Yeah. I didn't want to see it.
Of course,
in the boys' bathroom?
Right. And there's a more basic question of, really? This is the biggest educational problem in California. Right. Yeah. The test scores are going down. There are billions of dollars in the hole in debt. And this is the priority. Thanks, Jerry Moonbeam.
Yeah, you have one of the worst public school systems in the country, in California. All right, let's talk about this story.
Wait, I think I missed the goddess of irony. I think I missed the goddess of irony clip.
Controversial new law designed to protect transgender students in the state's public school. ...of each individual school district. And now it's a mandate defined any way this to pander political correctness.
I want to go into the girls' bathroom. Oh. Well, and also, we know that kids like to pull pranks.
That's what I was thinking.
This is what I'm thinking. You know, can you imagine, not that I did anything like that.
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine now the boys want to go into the girls' bathroom, and the girls wanted to go into the boys' bathroom, and they can just say, oh, well, I was transgender for the moment. I mean, it's just going to cause, teachers are already overburdened with disciplinary issues and trying to keep control in the classroom. I just can't get my head around this system.
There it is! Gretchen Carlson can't get her head around this. Well, Gretchen, nobody asked you to get head. From a straight person, a gay person, or a transgendered person. But they can't help it. They are absolutely helpless within the power of the goddess of irony. I can't get my head around this. Oh, she can be cruel, the goddess of irony. Yes, she can. But sometimes she's out there teaching. And that was a teachable moment. Fritz writing in. I just Googled this Pacific Justice Institute outfit and found their webpage. Oh, what is it that they do, Fritz? PJI seeks plaintiffs. Well, that doesn't mean they're looking for transgendered students to sue school districts. That could be that the Pacific Justice Institute, because it's all breaking. Governor Brown signed school bathroom bill into law. Oh, for heaven's sakes. They could be looking for plaintiffs to sue the state to try to stop this. That's much more likely, isn't it? Because they're an institute. If you were a transgendered person looking to sue for equality purposes, you'd go to a plaintiff's lawyer because there would be money involved. You're not going to get any money from the Pacific Justice Institute, I'm guessing. Jack in Shreveport, Fox Freaks. As this story continues on and I hear more of the clip, one can hear how much each of these freaks speaking in the clip are imagining and are generating more and more situations just off the top of their heads. This is what they think about and dwell on. It's not like they're asking students, these are the hosts and guests of Fox actually coming up with these scenarios. What the? Oh, I know, Jack, I know. Then Fritz from Arkansas. Michelle Malkin and her ignorance about trans issues. It's obvious just by this clip, Bob, that Michelle Malkin doesn't know jack shit about transgender people. But Radio Rwanda doesn't need actual facts as long as that life support system for mascaraed eyes keeps spouting horse shit. And all God's children gave a big amen to Fritz. Jeremy. Subject line. Trans persons. These news holes know not what they talk about, not one bit. Speaking for the rest of the community life as a trans person is almost constant uncomfort never ending, unless you choose to change, and then it's a new set of problems. Also the fact that a lot of the dumb out there just dwell on the thought of if you're trans, you're gay, and if you share a bathroom, they will look over and see your tiny penis and point and laugh. Oh, these MFers. Yeah, the stupid hurts. Hey, and this from Bob in Baltimore. Dear Brother Bob, I pledge to match up to $100 in donor contributions during the airing of your show tonight. Let me know how much I owe you afterwards. Thank you, and your wonderful family, for what you do for the rest of us. And I must thank all of your great guests who call in. Well, thank you, Bob. But they're not guests. We're all just neighbors. It's just a neighborly conversation that we hope is radically different from the scripted and predetermined. Yeah, it's just beautiful spontaneity. But thank you, Bob. Thank you. From Bob to Bob, thank you. So there it is. For the next 2 hours, whatever comes in, Bob will match up to and including $100. So that would be a great way to get us a little closer to being out of the hole. And you know, what a great way to double your money. So, 10 at $10, 2 at 50, 4 at 25, 5 at 20. You know the drill. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, a little break, and then your phone calls, if you are so inclined, and I hope you are. 304-658-3333. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Beautiful.
7 minutes past the hour. This is the Horn. Titanic Tuesday. And that song just seemed to fit. Once in a Lifetime, the classic, the Talking Heads. Thanks to Lottie for jumping in on Bob's Baltimore Challenge. We're 20 down and 80 to go. Thank you very, very much, Lottie. It is deeply appreciated. Of course, Lottie is a moderator in the Horn chat room. That's one of those things, one of those bills that has to be paid sooner rather than later. The chat room looks a little funny right now because all the fun bells and whistles aren't there. But if you've never been to the chat room, we've got a fun little bunch in there. Kind of a quiet evening tonight. We've got Anthropogene, Jug of Punch, Lottie, Mr. Gibson, Stockton Larry, who just noted a few minutes ago, if transgender children can choose which bathroom, the terrorists win. They hate us for that. Yeah, okay. And Thomas, who already helped out this evening, helped out a little more, so that pushes us to 40. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you immensely. By the way, just one last thing going back to the story. I can't let go of it. In an actual news story, not Fox News, about the passage and signing of the bill, detractors of the bill, including some Republican lawmakers, oh, come on, some, please, said allowing students of one gender to use the facilities intended for the other could invade the other student's privacy. Well, dip me in gravy and call me biscuit. All of a sudden, they're concerned with privacy issues? California Republican legislators, could I introduce you to Booz Allen Hamilton, the corporation in America that's done more to undermine American privacy than anybody else, including the NSA, the CIA, the FBI? Booz Allen Hamilton, your corporate friend. Invade people's privacy. Oh, phooey. And you know how I said a minute ago that I would love to just start the program by announcing that the Keystone XL pipeline had been deep sixed? Yeah, opposite of that. Erie, Illinois. Not E-R-I-E. Erie, Illinois. 11 p.m. last night. People either in bed or getting ready for bed or maybe staying up all night heard a massive kaboom. Do you know of any good kabooms? Because I don't. Residents of the town rushed to their windows and saw flames climbing 300 feet into the nighttime sky. What was weird about it is there was no building where the flames were climbing 300 feet into the sky. There was nothing but what there is a lot of in Illinois, south of Chicago. Cornfields. A cornfield blew up. Really? A cornfield blew up. Boom! No more cornfield. Well, no, not really. Something under the cornfield blew up. Another of America's aging and decrepit, another portion of America's aging and decrepit network of poorly tended natural gas pipelines blew. Now, this natural gas pipeline wasn't carrying natural gas. It was carrying the byproducts of natural gas, ethane and propane. Lived within a one-mile radius of the blast. They had to be evacuated. All but two of them had been returned home by Tuesday morning. Interestingly enough, air traffic controllers in Kansas City, Missouri, were told by overflying aircraft that they could see the fire in Pawnee, Illinois. Pawnee, Illinois, for the geographic fun of it, is 160 miles from Erie, Illinois. The assistant fire chief of Erie, Illinois, is Scott Melton, and he reassured people by saying that the operators of the pipeline had reduced the flow of natural gas by remotely closing a valve and letting the gas burn off. Ah, it's not much of a fire right now, but there's still some fuel left in the pipe, and they're going to let that burn off because it's the safest way to handle it. Yeah. I mean, you've already pumped a shit ton of carbon into the air, so just let it burn off. I had no idea that Erie, Illinois, was a center for the pipeline ownership and management, and that's probably because it's not. The pipeline was owned by Enterprise Products Partners. They're out of Houston. They own and operate 50,000 miles of natural gas, oil, and petrochemical pipelines throughout the United States. Back in 2011, one of those pipelines that they own, operate, and mismanage ruptured and dumped a 140,000 gallons, or some portion thereof, leaked into the Missouri River in Iowa. But they're job creators, right? So, just be alert. We live in an America now where the effing cornfields blow up. It's like that line from Animal House. Every spring, the toilets explode. Damn. 304-658-3333 is the number. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, and you're welcome to chime in that way if you wish. Thanks to Rob. Rob just jumped into the Bob's Baltimore Challenge, and we are now at $60 along the way. And that's awesome. Only 40 to go. Thank you very much. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
You won't say that when you hear my voice.
Hey, Bill, what's happening?
You again, you moron. Hey, how are you?
I'm the hell pretty good, I guess. I mean, except for, you know, losing my mind for the last hour and 15 minutes. I'll chase it down and get it back.
I get a kick out of Malcolm, and I just don't. Maybe because I've spent so much time, you know, reading the different parts of U.S. and Philippine history, you know. And in fact, I just hit a thing in this one.
Now, wait, are you telling me that Michelle Malkin is historical instead of hysterical?
Well, she is hysterical. But, you know, the Philippines, I mean, does anybody know about what her background is in the news business? And, like, where do these people come from?
Well, the way it usually works is if you are really, really hateful and you make a lot of noise about it, but you can be prettied up a little bit or look reasonably handsome as a guy. if you're extra good, if you're extra super duper good hateful, Bill, there's a job waiting for you, and it's generally a good paying job.
Oh yeah,
in the right wing sphere. And so that's, you know, she's let's see. You never talk about a lady's age, but you know, then again, we're not talking about a lady. She is 30, 40. Yeah, she's 43 years old. Well, she will be. She's coming up on 43. And her life is, let's see, she was born in Philly. I'm sorry. To Philippine citizens Rafaela and Apollo de Castro Maglalong. I'm sorry. She is what she criticizes as an anchor baby.
Well, maybe she, you know, in her case, she might be talking about the right thing, but. You know.
She is a supposedly devout Roman Catholic.
Oh, God.
She worked as a columnist in Los Angeles for the Los Angeles Daily News from 1992 to 1994.
2 whole years, huh?
And yeah, 2 whole years. And then she got, and this is where the other side has such a leg up on us, Bill. After 2 years of spewing hate and filth in Los Angeles, she immediately qualified for a fellowship in Washington, D.C. with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, which is described as a free market, anti-government regulation, libertarian think tank. Then she went, and then for reasons unknown to, I can't fathom why the Seattle Times would hire her, but the Seattle Times, no, that was the PI, that's probably some hateful right-wing rag. She moved to Seattle, Washington, and wrote columns for the Seattle Times, and then she signed on in 1999 with Creators Syndicate, and then she got, you know, basically she got the great big golf check from Happy Gilmore because she was so hateful she could get a really hate-filled website going, and that means that you get a paycheck from Fox.
Yeah. Did you ever see any stats on who reads this crap?
On what?
Breakdowns, any stats on the people who really follow that kind of stuff closely and why they feel the way they do. Any analysts been to work yet?
You know, there was that scientific work that was done that shows that people who follow her kind of hate have giant amygdalas. You know, that's the lizard brain.
Yeah.
It's hyper-developed.
Mm-hmm. That would explain some of it, yes. People sun themselves a lot. They on rocks or stuff. Keep their brains warm. Jeez. Well, I just don't know how long this country will go. And I wonder sometime what the young people are thinking, if they're thinking, if they know anything to base anything on, as to what.
No, they are motivated by fear and hate and anger, mistrust. You know, all the things that are the worst in human beings. And whether it's her or Flesh Flemball or that life support system for a haircut Hannity or any of the other right-wing hate-mongering weirdos, what they do is they provide an out for the ignorant. My friends, it's not your problem at all. You didn't cause this. Ronald Reagan loved America, and you love America, and America would be wonderful if a certain segment of our country would just get the bone out of its nose.
Jesus. It bothers me to know that, if you've got children or grandchildren, you start wondering that.
She is, by the way, the shame of Oberlin College in Ohio.
Oh, she went to Oberlin and came out with that attitude? That's unusual.
Well, that is a little shocking, isn't it?
He used to be unusual anyway, you know.
And then they had the short-sightedness to invite her back. She delivered an address at Oberlin in 2006. I'm just looking at the Wikipedia page. And, she does have 2 children. So... I guess maybe that explains her terror at the idea of transgender issues. But she got to give an address at Oberlin in 2006, and she denied that she's insensitive to what she called the plight of minorities. And she denied, and the way she denied that she was insensitive was by reciting a list of things that other people have called her.
Well, don't ever ask me for a list of those names. I couldn't repeat half of what I've heard, but I'll jump back to the first guy I ever heard along these lines. Sunday night, he was on tape from Notre Dame University. A guy named Dean Clarence Mannion. And God, that had to have been 60, because I was real young when I heard this guy. Doing a talk show a lecture show. It was very, very similar in the way it was handled, like the college professor that we would all listen to. And except for one thing, it was just really extreme talk that I hadn't heard much of yet. Remember, I'm tail end of was I talking to some woman and I said something about FDR and she said, oh, you're one of those. I said, no, I just happened to... I'm one of those who was born when he was still president, for not too long, but still for a while. I mean, the guy only did 4 terms, not completely, but close, He's elected for 4 terms. That's highly unusual. I've often thought the Republicans really hate when they came up with that amendment, didn't they? Hell, they could have propped up Ronnie for another term. And one of the guys could have had a hand up his back, and he could have talked, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Same old, same old.
Hey, I wanted to, speaking of, well, you kind of just sort of leaned into the topic for a second there. You know, I mentioned that what I described as a magnificent book about the battle of the battle off Samar. It was called The Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailors by a historian named James Hornfisher.
Yes, Samar. What was that, U.S. Navy thing?
Yeah, yeah. It's October 25th, 1944, when a bunch of little destroyers and destroyer escorts and jeep carriers held off a huge chunk of the Japanese Navy.
Leyte Gulf.
No, this isn't Leyte Gulf.
No?
No, it's Samar and the Surigao Straits.
Oh, it was close. It was the same. The Japanese had sent a whole bunch of ships out that way, yeah. The one I'm thinking was the one where the battleships, some of them who had been sunk in Pearl Harbor, got up and were pulled up and redone and fought the Japanese fleet. That was another.
Well, the reason I mention it to you is because it's very well written, and it's a really compelling book. And so last night I was looking around just to see what else he'd written. And he's got a brilliant, fairly well-received, very well-received new book, described as brilliant, about the naval aspect of the battle for Guadalcanal.
Oh, yeah, that was a huge part of it.
And then there's this, because you mentioned FDR, and I guess that's what got me going. Then there's this. So, if you're at Amazon.com, there's always a link that says go to the page for this author. And it'll list all the books that he's written. Okay?
Yeah.
So I did that. Because I just wanted to see if there was any stuff out there that at some point in time, maybe I'll go down to the library or whatever. And yeah, there was it's called Neptune's Inferno, the U.S. Navy at Guadalcanal. And then there's the book I told you about. Then he did Ship of Ghosts, which is the story of the USS Houston, FDR's legendary lost cruiser and the epic saga of her survivors, Service, a Navy SEAL at War. And then I scrolled down a little bit, and I just kind of went, oh, no. In August of 1997, this same guy penned a book called Hate Is Not a Family Value, a quote book for liberals in a right-wing world. Why would you do that, Bill? I mean, you've got a successful career as a historian. You're writing stuff that is respected far and wide. And then you take a big steam and dump on it by entering the toxic polemics of American late 20th, early 21st century political hate? Really?
Yeah.
Then he wrote another one. Right Thinking, Conservative Common Sense Through the Ages.
No, brother.
Who's smack dab in the middle of the picture on the cover of that book, Bill? Why, it's Ronald Reagan.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, I'll never read another word he writes.
Yeah, I know certain people can get you with stuff like that. Because it's just seemed that I've seen this. Well, I was in the middle of a war when I was born, so there was nothing else going on, I guess, in the country. But the changes that I have seen flow past me through the newspapers are enough to make one ill. Because a lot of us thought we put an end to this in the 64 election, when Goldwater was so roundly trounced. Partly by Johnson and a big part by the ghost of John Kennedy. It's the real reason.
Well, and you know, just to back up to something you mentioned a few minutes ago, the worst thing, I've become convinced that one of the worst things that the Congress and the people ever did was term limiting the president. Now, that's not because I'm sitting here yearning for a third Obama term or that I wanted a third Clinton term or God knows, well, Ronnie Reagan couldn't have eaten well. But, you know, a third Bush term. But the fact of the matter is, when you term limit a president, you basically reduce to irrelevancy the first term of a president.
Yes.
Because he has only one shot, and he's got to run for re-election. And after that, he's a lame duck any way you slice it.
Yeah. And he's just whatever, if you will, God. Yeah, when you're a lame duck, you're, you know. sometimes people push hard, but this guy isn't pushing hard. He talks a lot. Talking a lot. What was it, James Brown? Talk loud and say nothing or something?
Yeah.
That kind of phraseology. No, Samar, you still got me with that one, Bob. That it wasn't the one I was thinking. I was thinking
Look up October 25th, 1944.
Okay.
Halsey's fleet was off wandering around somewhere to the north of the Philippines.
Yeah, he was
looking for a phantom fleet. You know, the world wonders. Where is? You know.
Yeah, I remember that. Okay. I somehow missed the name of the engagement because there were so many engagements. The Japanese had a huge fleet of ships going through the Surigao Strait, going here, going there. They were trying everything under the sun to, you know, the Japanese Navy could never face reality. Never did, never would, will. But the one thing I picked up out of this book just recently was how close the talking phase between the United States and Germany in the late 1890s. Evidently, the Germans wanted to put one of their crown princes into the Philippines as the crown prince of the Philippines. And before that happened, we went to war with Spain and, of course, ended with the Philippines ourselves. And there was some pretty nasty talk between Dewey and the German Pacific Fleet commander, which I had never learned about before, I never heard about before. But, sir, I remember the name now of Surigao, but I knew there was so much, it gets so confusing at that point. But I remember when Halsey was off chasing nothing. Was he chasing empty aircraft carriers?
No, Halsey had gone off looking for a carrier task force that was actually sort of diverted to the north to accomplish its goal. It worked. The diversion worked.
Yeah.
But what happened was when he did that, they brought through a massive Japanese fleet.
Yeah.
And the only thing left to defend against it were this tiny handful of destroyer escorts, maybe two destroyers and a couple of carrier escorts, jeep carriers.
Yeah.
And they took an absolute butchering.
Yes, they did.
But the thing is, they stopped that Japanese incursion.
Because what I had missed somehow was the fight that I had mentioned when it was a bunch of three of the American battle. It was the last contact in world history between numbers of big battleships. And that was off. That was in the Philippine campaign also, the one to retake the islands, you know, which was massive.
Well, this was part of that.
Uh-huh. Because I somehow missed that the first time through this one book, and because sometimes people will send me stuff on CD, and the CD will be so bad you can't listen to a copy, you know. And my first wife's uncle was involved in the one that was an amazing. Those jeep carriers in particular, they were up against some pretty big stuff. The Japanese, one of the things that intrigued the hell out of me was the Japanese had their citizens out digging up pine trees. That's how short of oil they were at one point. That they were trying to take the oil from pine roots and make, you know, they were an amazing bunch of people, but it wasn't the people, it was, the people had a strength of character, but the Army and the Navy were leaning on them in the craziest of directions. Things they shake your head when you hear about and say, how the hell did they do that? How could they be convinced that this was going to work, you know? One of the things that fascinated me was a study of the Russians' invasion of Manchuria and how Stalin held three of his best European armies in the Berlin area and then shipped them by rail to Siberia to, you know, enter Manchuria. And the guys that were on the trains going east, they had a name for they called the Japanese samurais. And because these two nations had a history of first time they ever met each other was 1904, you know. And when the Japanese got a hold of Korea, and then the Japanese jumping into World War One to seize this German possession and that German possession so they could get it. It's like, I had this theory that sometimes the people, the nations that came to power latest in the world, history of the world, were some of the most dangerous. I mean, Germany did not really, what we would call Germany, did not really exist as a nation until the first Kaiser, as far as the united bunch of provinces, you know. And
well, that's true. And the origins of German nationalism lie in the crushing of the 1848 revolution that swept most of Europe.
A lot of those guys ended up here.
And that's when, you know, that's when the Bavarian states had to be brought to heel by the Prussians and the Junkers. And then you move inexorably toward German nationalism.
The money class, again.
Yeah.
There seems to be a tie-in between money and power and evil.
Oh, yeah. If money gets its head, other heads will roll.
Yeah. And everybody, you need the damn stuff to survive. And I actually went through a period that things were good, you know. And but me, I'm standing there pumping money into savings because that's all I could think. Be raised by Depression-era people. And I think you can make a few comments on that because you were raised...
By the same folks. Well, not the same folks, but the same sort of folks.
Same generation of thinking. And West Virginia, it saddens me as an American citizen to see my fellow Americans going through that because it was so good in the 60s. You know, we were there. I was at many anti-war demonstrations, and I just where I had a difference of opinion with a lot of guys is, well, you know, there's a time when you have to get involved against Adolf and people who are, you know, more militaristic than we were at the time. The United States Army in 37, I think, was smaller than Bulgaria. Interesting statistic. Our regular army was a small, little, compared with the big nations of England, France, Germany, you know, Russia. The number of men we had carrying weapons in the right before World War II was a pretty small, because we, you know, but you know why and I know why. Those big bodies of water that surround this country. You know.
Yeah.
How many infantrymen did you need? And what do we have for possessions? Hawaii? Alaska, but we bought that, so you can't. You know.
We bought that after the Russians stole it fair and square.
Yeah, the Russians stole it first, and then we bought it from them. And I've known guys in the neighborhood that used to come around the bars offering, hey, you want one of these? You didn't ask them where they got it, you know. Do I want one or don't I? But, yeah, you got this stuff. Because Malcolm and the whole Fox bunch.
To be fair, Bill, let me just jump in real quick. We're leaning on Fox on this just because it was such a pressed down and shaken together future diamond of stupidity.
Yeah.
You know. But CNN did it too, because this story got a lot of play today.
Yeah.
So, and again, this ties into that overarching foul, vile, hateful nastiness that, you know, we've got to present both sides, right? See, CNN feels like they've got to present both sides. Fox News just brings on Michelle Malkin and says, to hell with the transgender children. Well, but they got to present both sides on CNN, you know, balance, because, you know, every issue has an equally valid counter issue, right?
Yeah.
So they brought on this guy from SaveCalifornia.com. He's the president of that organization, and he's basically they're a hate group. And his name is Randy Thomason.
Mm-hmm.
And they were there to talk about the California law. And lo and behold, at the person who was countering him was a transgendered trans man by the name of Mason Davis. And, of course, you know, it was the usual stuff, invasion of privacy, perversion, precious bodily fluids, whatever.
Oh, boy.
But as they closed out, Brooke Baldwin hosted the so-called interview. You know, thanks. Thanks, Randy. Thanks, Mason. And Mason at the very end goes, at the very end says, hey, good to talk to you, ladies. You know, because Randy Thomason of SaveCalifornia.com is the one and only sole arbiter of gender, apparently, or at least his organization is. I mean, I guess, you know, I don't walk around thinking about these issues all the time. But really, what I said a little bit ago, Bill, isn't it true? Defining a human being, defining the totality of a human being by their sex organs? I mean, isn't that like defining them by their toenails?
Yeah.
Isn't it pretty dumb?
Yep. I mean, the way they, where the judgments they make of human beings are tend to the ridiculous, a lot of it. It just makes no reality sense at all. It's, but then again, Bob, when you were around in the days of before Dr. King, there was such stuff that you couldn't believe that you heard about. Things like
race mixing, miscegenation.
Yeah, exactly. The same kind of crap that whatever they believe, you better believe. Because that's when they start posting the, if you don't believe the way we do, you're un-American. That's the other.
Yeah.
I saw that, too, to some degree. But I'm going to get off the phone, but I want to say thanks to one of our, well, there's a couple guys who have been really helpful to me in different ways, and one I've become pretty friendly with. And last night I had a chance to go out and listen to some music and have dinner with some regular members of the Horn audience.
Awesome!
Well, it's nice, because
I'm jealous.
Both of these people... the fellas who listen are both have been both helpful with computers with me, and it was fun to be out last night. And the guy we went to hear was a guy who's very complimentary to me because he was young when I was already a middle-aged player, and he got me up to play a song with him, and it's, you know, good feeling. Although later on I started getting angry and saying, Bill, how come you can't play a whole night like that anymore? And then one guy keeps commenting to me about the Santa Claus story, but I refrain from that one, Bob.
I understand. Yeah. But I was about to ask you, did you have to recount the Santa Claus story while you were there?
No. No, this is a different... I think I did tell this fella maybe the story once. But it was a real pleasure to get out with people who... You know, you could open your mouth about politics without having an argument with them.
Yeah,
and have your feelings. But what I got out of this book on World War One, the Navy, was I had forgotten how close we actually came to a wide open shooting war with Germany in the 1890s. I remember it was mentioned in history class, but they didn't cover it too deeply. But when this guy covered it, George Dewey versus some. Because I didn't realize it, but this historian brought up the fact that the Germans wanted to possess the Philippines and make one of their crown princelings the leader of the nation. Man, oh man, in that period of time, these guys couldn't grab enough, could they, Bob?
Can they ever? Is enough in there?
Well, that's what bothers a lot of people I talk to. Don't understand the greed of the upper class in this country. They cannot seem to get enough. Because I'll tell you what's happened, something I've seen with the bad eyes and such. I'm attached to the system in some ways. And the changes I've seen them do, they're petty, little, small things, but they're a real pain in the butt for the person. And I wonder about folks who are 20, 25 years from Social Security, whether they'll ever see it.
Bill, I am 20 years from Social Security, because I'll have to be 70.
Yeah.
And I wonder too.
And when you tell them that the first...
And I don't wonder because I lack faith in the system itself. I wonder because I can't trust Republicans not to steal it.
Yeah.
Because, see, there's a process at work here. One of those processes was getting rid of defined pension plans and putting people at the tender mercies of the stock market. Well, if you remember when George Bush was, W. Bush was reelected in January of 2005, he said, I've got some political capital, and I'm going to spend it. And that's why we're going to put Social Security in the stock market, where it can grow.
Yeah, so when, and, oh, yeah, it'll get huge, and if it doesn't, it'll be nothing. They don't talk about that part.
Hey, by the way, Isaac just dropped a note and said, just, he said simply, tell Bill I said, ho, ho, ho.
He's a sick man.
And delightfully so.
Yeah, it's you know, he's been a fascinating person, and my friend who, south of here, from a city that I lived in with my last girlfriend, and I can't even remember the name of the damn place. Isn't that shame what happens to you sometimes? And it was just delightful to be out with people who are connected with the horn, and as far as I know where they what they listen to. I'd love to get in that chat room, but I think my eyes and such keep me out of it. I think that it would.
Yeah, it'd be nice if there was some sort of text to speech thing for you, but yeah. I don't know if there is for Java's chat.
I have a text to speech program, which is how I stay abreast of email, etc. But yeah, you see, Malcolm bothers me because I know, you know, I've read so much about the Philippines in World War II and the early. Which is why I do have a bad attitude about the Japanese military to this day. And, of course, the Nanking situation. That book was so heavy I had to stop reading it because don't try to read that and eat a sandwich, you know. It's one of those things you don't do. But it just keeps rolling, Bob. You keep coming up with these things.
Well, look, I think we can generalize a little bit here, can't we? Every time you come up with there is no good end that comes of nationalistic militarization.
Yes, you're right.
Whether it's Japanese or Germans or Austrians or Americans, there's no good that comes of it.
Well, yeah, the idea that Austro-Hungary was powerful enough to jump into World War One, and they couldn't keep it up, that destroyed them quickly. The damned emperor was, what, 70 years old? Franz Josef, and it was his nephew.
Well, but they stayed in it long enough to make a horrible, horrible mess on the Italian front.
Oh, yeah. They did not do well against the... Well, at first, the Serbians handed them their heads, too. But then Bulgaria joined the war on the side of the Central Powers, and they overran Serbia, and which led to one of the most fascinating things, a whole army that came out of what the Bible would call Thessalonica.
Yeah,
and,
Thessaly.
Salonika in southern Greece. A lot of the guys who had been at Gallipoli ended up there, and they didn't do much for 2 years or so. But in July or June of 1918, they broke the grip of the... They drove the Bulgarians out of the war, and a French North African cavalry outfit of, you know... could have been the Algerians, made a march that the author described as the last great cavalry movement in European history that wasn't mechanized. And that was out of the war. Anyway, I'll let you go, but in fact, it's so interesting. You know, the British made Germans bring every piece of ship they had, battleship, over to Scapa Flow and surrender their subs and everything else. That was a pretty hard piece on Germany. And, of course, it gave rise to the next idiot to arise from the ashes of World War One. He came out of Austria, you know.
True.
Anyway, I'll let you go.
Bill, you have yourself a good night.
Take care now.
Bye now. That's our buddy Bill calling from Cleveland. And a note in from Karen. Hi, Karen. She just chipped in on Bob's Baltimore challenge. It is we're nearing success with Karen. We're now at 70 out of the $100 of the challenge. Thank you, Bob. And thank you, Karen. Karen noting, here's a tiny token of my appreciation for the for Meet the Feetles. You had me giggling for most of the evening last night. I know, I was still giggling over Meet the Feetles this morning. The possibilities are endless. And like I said, we were pretty much at a two-album set last night. I'm going right back to the phone, so if you're on hold, stay there, please. But the possibilities are endless. For instance, Meet the Feetles could include a song called Come Together, but only heterosexually. How about You Never Give Me Your Voting Rights? She came in through the abortion clinic window. Like I said, yeah. Dr. John did a magnificent job. Michael did a magnificent job. I think we could just a little work. Oh. You've got to hide your abortion clinic away. You're going to lose that fetus. I've just seen a face on the ultrasound that I had to have but didn't want. See what I mean? So hopefully we provided another little giggle to Karen. Karen, thank you very much. $30 to go, and we meet Bob from the Bob's Baltimore Challenge. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jeremy, what's happening?
That final song was pretty funny last night. It had me cracking up, too. It took the attention ball in my mouth after I heard Rick Santorum speak.
That will... You know those medicines that say if you overdose, do not induce vomiting?
Yes.
Rick Santorum induces vomiting.
He can't not say something that isn't idiotic. The best he tries, I'll give him... He speaks... good English, he is grammatically correct, but he cannot say something that's not completely hogwash and just babble when he speaks. It's almost like listening to Pat Robertson, only even more hateful in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, by the way, we've got a couple of new song possibilities for Meet the Feetles. Lottie just suggested Maxwell Silver Speculum. I countered with Maxwell Silver Stirrups. So,
yeah. But about that clip you played tonight from Fox and Friends.
Yeah, pretty astonishing, isn't it? I mean, that's
pretty... I'm surprised they weren't flashing an overhead banner during the clip of them saying, hey, look at these freaks, watch out, they're bad people, they're going to kill your kids, they're rapists, they're murderers, they're child pornographers.
Yeah, don't you want your little boys to grow up and get head injuries playing football instead of mincing around in some goddamn tutu?
Yeah, exactly. It astonishes me that people have no idea what they speak of. I have had people approach me, close friends of mine, because I haven't exactly... I've led a normal life. I don't look like anything that anyone else isn't. Kind of like you can't sometimes... To put this nice, you can't sometimes tell when someone's gay, but sometimes you can. I fit in that category, but I'm not gay. But people think I am because they can always tell there's something slightly different about me. So I've been asked my whole life, are you gay? I always say no. People don't understand that. I'm not gay. I'm completely heterosexual.
But they make assumptions.
They make assumptions, yeah.
Yeah, see, if Michelle Malkin could have her way, everybody would just have a tattoo on their forehead.
No, it's funny. Looking back on it, I didn't come to the realization until I was in my early 20s. That's quite late, but the signs were all my life. I was never a girl crazy. Not one second of my life was I girl crazy. Because they have been girl crazy. But I like girls, obviously. But things have been there all along. But people make a lot of assumptions and don't understand the general anxiety you have when you live this lifestyle. It's always there. It never goes away. You can push it down as deep as far as you want, but it comes back in successive waves. It's almost like the ocean and the hurricane. It gets worse if you try to suppress it. And I'm sure some people who have been addicts in the past probably can feel something similar to that. And yes, usually, as
well. Can I ask a couple of tough questions?
Yeah.
Would life be simpler if you could just be who you are all the time?
If I could flip the switch today and nothing would change in my life, I would do it in less than a heartbeat. But society will not dictate that. It will not accept that. It's one thing, I have a lot of friends who say, hey, you are who you are, I don't care, I love you no matter what you do. It's one thing to say that, it's a second thing to walk the line if it ever happens. Most people that say they're okay with it till you put it in their face and they're forced to do it, and then their attitude changes, like, oh, I didn't want this. That'll happen more than I can imagine a lot of people I know. Any other questions?
No, and I hope I wasn't being rude in asking that.
I think
the overarching argument behind this statute in California is that yes, there will be there will be some and no pun intended transitional issues for the usual crowd of brutes and thugs and punks and bigots whom we have in high schools, whom we have in grade schools. But that once we get the 5-year-olds through 12th grade, everything will be so normalized that a lot of that hate will go away. And just because we can't solve every problem in a school system with one thing, Michelle Malkin, yeah, but what about test scores? What about test scores? You know, F her. Pardon me, that was sexist.
I agree with it.
No, I mean, it just to hell with her. Why is it everything has to be a magic bullet? Why can't we just eliminate? I mean, is there no good to be said in right wing world, Jeremy, for eliminating a little bit of hate? Is there no good world for eliminating one transgendered boy hanging by his belt from the shower curtain rod? I mean, if we stop that once, hasn't the law done a good job? Or is it more important that the punks and the bigots and the homophobes and the brutes and the knuckle walkers, he hiked up his skirt and took a pee-pee in the urinal? Really? That's the more important part of this?
The overarching thing always goes back to they love you when you're in the womb. Once you're born, you're fucked. They don't care anymore. Especially if you don't fit what they say you should fit. If you don't fit a role, or because you look this way, or you sound this way, you should be that way, well, then they have to separate you from the rest. It's like that one person said sometime last year, that if they could put all the gays up, they'd happily do that in a second. If they could really do it, they meant it. It wasn't sarcasm, they meant it. They'd put all the gays on an island and then make them fend for themselves, and when they died off, we'd be cured of gays. Like, we'd be cured of AIDS because it's their disease. They brought it on. Even though it was first transmuted by a French, he was homosexual, but a French guy just randomly came out of wherever it came from, but that's where they get it from.
And, you know, to be fair, Jeremy, it must be difficult if you live a family life with a member of your family and you are totally freaking clueless that child's entire life that the child is not comfortable with gender norms. Let's just assume that that clueless person exists. And then one day he or she says, well, you know, I'm really much more a female, or I'm really much more a male, and I don't define myself by my genitals. It must be shocking. It could be hurtful. I guess it could be even devastating. But is that the standard of review that we want to impose here? Because if it is shocking, I'll tell you what I'm thinking particularly of. I'm thinking in particular of the Navy SEAL, who is involved in massive macho butch combat operations in Afghanistan, and the whole time was yearning simply to be the gender that she really was, and now she's transitioning and she's written a book.
Yeah, you know what, I laugh in her case only because, not because of the, well, mostly because of the situation. That is one person that will have a hell of an easier time than everyone else will. I tell you right now.
Yeah, because she will kick the living daylights out of anybody.
So either people who made them or killed them without a second thought.
But the point that I'm reaching for here, Jeremy, is this. If you're a right winger, by definition, you have to worship at the altar, at the shrine of militarism and machismo. And you say things like, I don't know how I feel about the women folk going into combat. They are, after all, the delicate flower of our civilization. And you make a total ass of yourself in the process. Imagine, being empathetic people, we try to put ourselves in other people's shoes, even if they're people that we don't necessarily agree with. Imagine the dismay. Imagine the shock. Imagine the horror, even, that he was a SEAL, the best of the best of the best. He was America's, and he wants to... Matilda? What the hell? Where are we? You know, this is not my beautiful home. This is not my beautiful life. This is not... You see what I'm saying?
Yes. It turns people's reality upside down when something like that happens and the spotlight's put on it. Because it makes them question their own beliefs. And honestly, I think a lot of it comes from a lot of these people who hate and choose not to agree or see something. They're hiding something. I bring this to my mom all the time. My mom's very accepting, doesn't care. My father doesn't care either. The rest of my family, questionable. I don't say anything to the rest of my family. Some of my friends, I do. But I've always told her that a couple of years ago, my uncle has a slight bit of a depression, but that doesn't matter. We were at the dinner table at, like, Thanksgiving or something, and he said something, and I came out and said, well, we've all got secrets. We've all got niches we hide. We've all got things we don't tell the outside world. And he automatically took the defensive spot of, like, I'm not hiding anything. What are you hiding? Right there, he outed himself as hiding something.
And absolutely. Hiding? No.
Right, and I always chuckle at that because people are quickest to out themselves when defending themselves from fear. So, I don't know, but it's hate. It'll always be there. All you have to do is scratch a little bit on the surface. It's never going to go away. We can hope all we want. It's not going to go away. People are always going to be scared of what they don't understand and can't perceive.
Yeah, and I guess gender is probably the last... Is gender the last frontier of this?
I think it's the last one. It's definitely gotten better since when, say, like, some other people are coming up. Definitely it's gotten better since... Even in the last 20 years, it's gotten better.
Okay, and I guess this was the question I was leading up to when I was asking you a moment ago, Jeremy. Assume for a moment that... I mean, the five-year-olds out there. If you had had available to you the ability to express, you know, and be who you're at five, and just the social worker or psychologist was out there and could say, yep, oh, we got gender issues, would your life be materially better?
At this point, I think it would have been. When I was still a teenager / kid, I went through some, we'll just say issues for personal reasons, and I saw a psychologist. Well, the psychologist asked me some of the tough questions as a kid, and since I was still kind of indoctrinated into the church and stuff like that,
whoops.
I answered the way, what's that?
No, just indoctrinated by the church. Yeah. Sooner or later, that comes into every conversation, doesn't it?
Yeah, it affects everything. So I answered the way I thought my mom would want me to answer at the time. Now, looking back, they let that go and just let it go. They didn't think anything into it. I think they got it wrong at that time. Looking back at it now. Am I mad about it? No. It's a mistake made, but they didn't take into account it as a kid and their questioning and their realism into what was going on. So it's gotten better. It's still really hard.
I guess the ultimate question out of that is, can we expect life to be better as a result of this law for today's five-year-olds? If they get to just be who they are all their lives, I mean, we're not talking about, you know, somebody's going to give them a laurel and hearty handshake, or they're going to get, and you know, anything extra, or and that's, you know, the little kindergarten brain of the authoritarian right. Well, they're going to get something I ain't got. They're going to get to go to a different bathroom.
I don't get to go to a different bathroom. Privilege. I'm being discriminated against. Right? So,
right.
But no, we're just talking about trying to take away the vast negatives that wind up killing people or getting people killed.
Right, and in his own way, Jim has alluded to some of those stories about how he was in great danger in his younger days. He's seen a world of change. I can only imagine the world of change that Bill has seen throughout his musical career and the stuff he's seen. I mean, I've seen a lot of change. I'd like to see more. It's going to take a long time and persistent. In the end, people that face things, I mean, you can't back off. You got to keep putting the pressure on because eventually things will somewhat get better.
Jeremy, thanks a bunch. I really appreciate your candor on this because it adds a significant layer or element of reality to the stupidity that was being... I mean, this is professional broadcasting, Jeremy. I know I say that a lot, but it's because every time I get hold of one of these dumbass clips, I find myself saying that to myself. This is professional broadcasting. I mean, they got expensive cameras. They've obviously got a fancy set. They got little computer-generated font and Chiron stuff and they can make this, and they can run the thing, the PC police with the sirens and the squad car with the flashing lights, and they're well dressed and they're paid ungodly amounts of money to sit there and babble bilious, hate-filled horse dung. And you know, it leaves me a little bit astonished.
I hear the same thing because, like I said in the past, I listen to a show later at night on a clear channel station, which happens to be a Fox channel. It's not political, though, so I accept it, the show I listen to. But the people that come on before the guy I listen to, one night they said that Rachel Maddow needs to wear some lipstick and shut up. That's what she needs to do. That's the kind of hate they still...
You're kidding.
No, that she needs to learn to wear some lipstick and act like a lady and shut up.
Well, oh, wow, cool, because I'm sure they don't use lipstick over at MSNBCIA.
Right.
But
so even on radio, they push the bounds of what they can say about people just based on what they look like or they think they should do. Now, bless Rachel and her.
So Rachel's, I mean, they really do. Hell, men wear lipstick. You know, just a little something, just a little less than skin tone, just to bring out the features on the face under the hot and glaring lights. I mean, it starts with theater makeup and then film and then, you know, there's TV. But obviously Rachel Maddow does wear lipstick on TV. Are they saying it's not bright red enough? What do they want, purple?
It's not bright red enough, and they can't see her wearing her high heels and a skirt.
What, so they want her to go on? What, they want to hire as her wardrobe consultant somebody who dresses the women in Mad Men?
I think that's what their big angst is, yeah. And she's a constant target of the right wing because of who she is. And she's not afraid to admit who she is.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Rachel Mando.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jesus, that's pathetic. And that was kind of a snarky little thing I said a minute ago, MSNBCIA. I apologize for that.
That's fine, because, you know, as good as much as I respect their opinion, they keep their mouth shut when it comes to Bradley Manning and other things. They should really speak up, but they can't do it because they're too pressured by goddamn Comcast. But they never leaked a peep about that trial, never said a word about it, other than when it came up and when he was caught.
Yeah.
Other than that, they've been tight-lipped. But with that, I'll let you go, and hopefully people are a little bit right here now.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you sincerely. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Bye now.
Bye.
A little bit of reality. And you know, it takes... I'll say it takes courage. Jeremy, it's just life. Thank you. By the way, ever since I mentioned it in relation to Karen's note, Meet the Feetles has taken on new life. And, well, Michael missed his calling. Michael has real comic potential here. You've got to hide more. So I think we're now on the third disc. It's going to be, for those of you who remember albums, it's going to be like now Wings Over America, which was like four or something, or maybe it was three. But it folded open three ways. So we're on album three at this point. You've got to hide your, according to Michael, Kid A, when he pops into the chat room, you've got to hide your gay away, the ballad of Michelle and Marcus, everybody, and this is my favorite, this is from the Blah album, everybody's got something to hide except for me and my monkey that I am most definitely not related to because evolution is a lie and I ain't kin to no monkey.
Toaster. Chromium plated, fully illuminated, genuine accessory, heat shift and knob, bagel wide, extra wide for the big bowls of sourdough. I mean, toaster. Everybody's got something to hide except me and my monkey that I'm most definitely not related to because evolution is a lie and I ain't kin to no monkey. And then unwanted fetuses forever. Yeah. And gay bashing is back in the USSR. Wow. And with a little bit more time and a humongous staff, we could turn every one of these things into a song parody because there's lots of Beatles karaoke out there. Wow. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is Jim in St. Tammany Parish, a.k.a. Louisiana Stan.
What's happening in St. Tammany?
Not much. I got a little Beatles song. I don't know if I heard it yet. What about Happiness is a Warm Womb?
Okay. Yep.
How's that going?
I like that. We were thinking about Happiness is a Warm Transvaginal Probe. Because based on things that my wife has told me, those damn things are always cold.
Well, I mean, that being a woman, I'll take your wife's word for it.
Well, that's kind of where I am. I do, too.
Yeah. But yesterday was a great show, man, especially the beginning with the, I'm going to flash back a little bit, but with the two religious nitwits who were going to go with no experience sailing and just, you know, cast their sails to the wind, and Jesus was going to save them. But in the end, it didn't end up being Jesus, but I'm sure in some way they considered that that was Jesus saving them. And I'm sure in one way or the other, they're going to end up on the 700 Club and tell their story.
I had an email overnight after the program was over, and I about gave myself a hernia laughing. Trying to see where this is, see if I can find it. Just one second here. I got this note saying that no, God did not tell them to take a boat to Kiribati. God told her to get a float at Ghirardelli. Which
Are you sure it wasn't get a frontal lobotomy?
Yeah, well, yeah, I'd rather have rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. You get it. Yeah.
And what's weird is the thing that these Republicans and religious nitwits want to cut out. Well, actually, it wasn't the U.S. Navy that saved them, the Coast Guard. It was basically, from what I remember, they got saved by some ships at sea. You know,
yeah.
I mean, to get back, that costs money, you know? I mean, you think they're going to reimburse the U.S. government for whatever it costs them? Or?
I don't know. The story as I read it said, you know, they were picked up by a Venezuelan boat that then transferred them to...
Communist country, isn't it? Venezuela.
Socialists! They were probably fishing for socialist mackerel or something.
Something like that.
And then transferred to a Japanese boat, and there's lots of socialism in Japan, too, and probably government control of religion and taxes, and, oh, my God, I don't know how they survived the ride to Chile. But then there was the plane ride home that was arranged by the U.S. consulate, and I don't know how that works. I've never been, and hope I never am, stranded in a foreign country. I had a note come in earlier today from Greg, and he said, listening to Moran Mundy at work right now, busting a gut. He said, Southern Cross, priceless. Too bad the Gastonguays didn't make it to Kiribati. According to the article I read, the island will possibly be uninhabitable within the next 30 to 60 years. And then he added, unfortunately, Kiribati already has their fair share of fundies there, even though the island is sinking. The Catholic Church, surprise, in Kiribati has already denied that global warming could possibly be caused by man. Oh, sweet, sweet goddess of irony, Gregory says. And thank you, Gregory, to that. There was... And I don't know why, except for the fact that it was so very profound, that this story had real resonance with people, Jim. And maybe that's because it was so extreme.
Yeah, well, the whole thing, I mean, it sounds to me like they knew very little about sailing, and they figured, well, we'll just put our faith in God, a.k.a. Jesus, and it'll prove our faith. That's why I said, I mean, even what happened, because what they'll do is they'll turn, even though they did everything wrong, Jesus still saved them. Now, the thing is, there could be 100 people who did the same thing and died. Of course, you wouldn't hear about them. Yeah, because they drowned, because they weren't well prepared. They didn't know jack shit about being at sea, or, you know, the thing, because that's something you pick up in a couple of weeks at a sailing course that takes time to try and do what they
do. Yeah, I mean, you don't just, even if you've got a romantic hang up with sailing like I've got enough sense that if I win the lottery, you know how that goes, Jim. But I'm not, you know, you don't go, the first step is not to go out and buy the 125-foot sailing yacht. You find a nice calm piece of flat water with some wind blowing on it and learn to sail a little laser, you know, with like one stinking rope.
Yeah.
Or else you wind up in the middle of the South Pacific. Help! God sent us here. You know, God sent us to cure it. God sent us to the middle of the Pacific. God knows why.
Well, like I said, it just works into why. I mean, God saved them. That, you know, that was to prove that he was there. Like I said, that points out for the 100 people who don't get saved, that they obviously, their faith wasn't deep enough. They didn't really trust. And most importantly, they probably didn't tithe. You'd be surprised how important that tithing is.
Oh, it's big. It's big. And there's one more unanswered question out of that story, Jim, that I want an answer to. Do they plan to try it again?
Let's hope so, Bob. And
you're evil. You're wicked. You're just evil and wicked.
Thank you, Bob. Well, when you're born again atheist, you know, it's just the way you are. You know?
Do you put on your horns to call the program, Jim?
I'm putting them on right now.
Okay, because I know the pitchfork's just propped in the corner.
It's always there, Bob. It's always Bob. Well, I'm going to let you go. Some more people get in. Another great show. But like I said, that was just, and your presentation and everything was just exemplary. Fantastic.
Well, thank you. There was no overt attempt at presentation, but I appreciate that. Most of the time, as is the case with tonight's lead story, if you will, it's just a matter of me sitting here in sort of gobsmacked non-silence. I mean,
well, Mr. Hicks would be very proud. Praise Mr. Hicks. Peace be with him.
Peace be upon Bill Hicks, indeed. Jim, you have a good evening.
You too.
Take care. Bye now. Calling from the wilds of St. Tammany Parish in Louisiana, Stan, our buddy Jim. Jim 2. Jim 1 is in West Virginia. Oh, God, I don't... Really? No. I'm going through stories here, just trying to figure out what I've got to starch to march in. Oh, look! Steve King. I know. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. It's like... No. Agent Fred, will you please calm down? I wasn't suggesting that anybody put Steve King in a barrel and start shooting at him. But, yeah, look, there's Steve King. Protector of America from 130-pound Mexicans with cantaloupe calves. Yeah, you're right, Michael. That may be your best, but I don't know. I've got a potential, a significantly more offensive track for Meet the Feetles from Michael here. especially in light of the fact that that Rick Santorum will be playing the late 1950s Rickenbacker bass and being our Paul, even though Rand Paul is going to be our Ringo. Things get very confusing very quickly. But there's a potential. It's potentially offensive. But Michael says it may be his best work. He said, I don't know if you feel comfortable saying this on the air, but this might be my best one. It just hit me. It definitely fits with the way these freaks think, especially with Rick Blah Santorum. Anyway, wait for it. And we are going to wait for it because we're going to take a little poll here. It's potentially offensive. But it's special good. And I don't know, maybe this would, Michael, would this be the bonus track on Meet the Featles? So if you will forgive Michael and me for this in advance, I'll share it with you. But you gotta give us both that sort of I don't know, it's gotta be pre-expiated or something. So bobkincaid@gmail.com or @bobkincaid on Twitter. Operators are standing by. They're not. But check in if you want to know the title of the bonus track. The bonus track to Meet the Featles. This will be sung by Rick Santorum. Well, there's vote number one from Randy in PA. Go ahead and be Peter Griffin, Bob. Oh, that's cold, Randy. That's cold. And thanks, by the way, to Ken. And thanks to Sal. Bob's Baltimore Tuesday night horn challenge has been met. Okay, Marty says, you've made us endure both Radio Rwanda and Michelle Malkin. Let's hear it. It's going to take more than two votes. Chug a punch in the chat room. If it's not Mr. Stress's Santa Claus joke, it is not offensive. So, we'll see. We'll see. It'll come in due time. It's good, I tell you, in a very offensive way. While the votes roll in, here at 20 minutes past the hour, about 35 minutes of conversation left in the program this evening, yeah, let's go back to Steve King. Because like a moth to a flame, I'm drawn to this stuff. Lucky for you, we do not have to listen to his nasal Midwestern accent. Not that all Midwestern accents are nasal or anything, but Steve King's is. So the Teabaggers sponsored a Stop Amnesty rally yesterday. Very few, that means almost nobody, showed up. Which is a little bit surprising because it was in Richmond, Virginia, the Old Dominion. The photograph I have here shows, and it comes from Politico, shows Steve King standing at a podium in front of a little octagonal appearing brick building. Looks like maybe it was a Hardee's maybe 40 years ago. One guy with a camera filming him, and nobody else, and that's defined as sparsely attended. They're in the Old Dominion, where they're proudly going to be flying a Confederate battle flag right by I-95. You would think that you would get some attendance for Steve King. Nobody showed, but that's not going to stop Steve King running his mouth. Sadly, we don't have the audio, so you're just going to have to tolerate me reading the quote. Stop Amnesty, remember, was the theme. So therefore, we're going to get some more anti-Hispanic, anti-Latino, anti-people who have a lot of native blood of this continent, these continents, running through their veins. At the rally that no one attended but Steve King, he said, literally to no one in particular, if you, and hang on. me. I have to get in a newsreader voice. If you bring people from a violent civilization into a less violent civilization, you're going to have more violence, right? It's like pouring hot water into cold water. Does it raise the temperature or not? It's going to take a minute. Because I've read this a dozen times today. And every time I read it, it gets a little more stupid. I mean, I wonder if Steve King gets up in the morning baffled by his shoelaces and gets home at night with struggling to remember to breathe out and breathe in. You cannot be this dumb and have an autonomic nervous system. Or maybe you can be this dumb and have an autonomic nervous system, but not much more. To recap, if you bring one of these days, this is going to be like some sort of, we're going to have video augmenting the broadcast, and we'll diagram sentences just like my grandmother. If you bring people from a violent civilization into a less violent civilization, you're going to have more violence, right? It's like pouring hot water into cold water. Does it raise the temperature or not? I suppose we could say with that last sentence that it's entirely a question of degree. Stunning. He went on to cite particular countries. The further south you go, the more violent it becomes. I can finish the program on this. I mean, I got 30 solid minutes on just how godforsaken dumb this is. Because it is stunningly stupid. Politico describes him as a conservative firebrand because Politico is a pathetic rag that probably would be an indignity to put in your parrot's cage. Not an indignity to Politico, but to the parrot. Politico notes that apparently eventually 60 people showed up but were not willing to be photographed. But yes, there is. Within that quote, if you bring people from a violent civilization into a less violent civilization, you're going to have more violence, right? It's like pouring hot water into cold water. Does it raise the temperature or not? There are assumptions buried within that profoundly ignorant statement. The assumption being that somehow or another, the United States of America is less violent than, say, Chile, or Argentina, or Brazil, or Peru, or Costa Rica, or El Salvador, or Guatemala, or Honduras, or Ecuador, or Colombia, or Venezuela, And that ain't true. If you go sheerly by the numbers, this is the most violent country on the planet. Hell's bells, Iraq never did a damn thing to us, and we promptly marched over there and slaughtered a million innocent civilians. Or helped to, or caused them to. And then there's Afghanistan. But Donald Rumsfeld was perturbed by its lack of cool shit to blow up. There aren't any good targets in Afghanistan. We can't bomb them into the Stone Age. They're already there. I submit to Steve King of Iowa that that's pretty violent. And that's without taking into account lawyers in Charleston, West Virginia, shooting themselves in the head after starting after engendering a police standoff. Or perhaps a mentally ill man being able to buy all the guns he wants to and shooting up Virginia Tech. Or Adam Lanza with mommy issues, blowing away mommy and then chewing a bunch of school children into pieces. This is a violent country. Violent people in a violent country are going to get along just fine. Except we don't want those people to have any guns, of course, because we have guns and we do violence to each other, including going to get a venti half-calf mocha caramel macchiato latte with extra soy foam at Starbucks and shooting our best friend in the leg when we drop our purse with our gold-plated 25 caliber pistol in it. Oh, hell no. That was an accident. That's not violence. Ask the person that got shot whether it was violent or not. How violent is it, for instance, delving into the stack? How, excuse me, how violent is it that a young man, a teenager, badly in need of a heart transplant, how violent is it to deny that teenager a heart transplant because you don't think his grades are good enough and he's had some run-ins with the law? This is kind of like the Trayvon that doesn't get shot, just gets killed by medical bigotry. Anthony Stokes is looking at 6 months to live. He's 15 years old. He's from the Atlanta area. I do not have to tell you what color his skin is. You already know. With 6 months to live because he has an enlarged heart, oh my God, medical authorities have stated that he is ineligible to even be on the list because they claim, these medical authorities, that he is non-compliant and that he's had bad, and non-compliance is designed as having had some bad grades. There's an update on the story. The medical officials grudgingly have added Anthony Stokes to the transplant list. Unless you are Dick Cheney, however, or Steve Jobs, getting on the transplant list does not mean you get a transplant. That just means you sit around waiting on the list until you die anyway. Well, we put him on the list. I mean, he was non-compliant and everything. He had run-ins with the law. 14-year-old male, black. 13-year-old male, black. If you are of dark skin in the United States and you are male, and this is a legitimate question, how old are you when you have your first run-in with the law? And it's not so much that you're running in with the law, but the law is running into you. They claimed that he wouldn't take his medicine if he got a transplant. They claimed that he wouldn't go to his follow-up appointments. Well, if you don't take the medicine and you don't go to the follow-ups, you die. But Children's Health Care of Atlanta relented. It's a happy ending story, only it's not. Because, see, nobody's going to be talking to the people at the transplant list and saying, listen, I got a former vice president of the United States here. He's a very important man. He's got a Secret Service and everything. And you know what? If you don't get him to the top of that list, and you don't go out there and bump off somebody for a heart for him, I can guarantee you he's going to come and shoot you in the face. Funny. Having some run-ins with the law didn't exactly knock Dick Cheney off the list or keep him off of it. That's pretty violent, though. It's pretty violent, condemning Children's Health Care of Atlanta, condemning initially a little boy to death. If you bring people from a violent civilization into a less violent civilization, you're going to have more violence. Right? Wrong! What the... Does Steve King think the Mexica people are still running the Mexica, the Triple Alliance Empire from Tenochtitlan in the Valley of Mexico?
They do human sacrifice down there. It's a very violent culture. That's why they got those drug wars in there, cutting off people's heads.
I mean, it is human sacrifice. And if you pour hot water into cold water, does it raise the temperature or not? So we're cold, but, you know, those Latinos, they are hot-blooded. Hot-blooded Latins. You know, like, well, we all saw how hot-blooded Ricky Ricardo was. And then of course, there is Ricardo Montalban. And we all know how hot-blooded it sounded when he would say, rich, fine Corinthian leather. Ah, you task me, Steve King. You task me. And once again, the story is not necessarily about the ignorance displayed by Steve King. The story is about the number of people that support Steve King, even if a whole bunch of them didn't show up in Richmond last night. It was Richmond, and, you know, you tend to have your clavern meetings with the Grand Dragon and the Noble Kleagle. Those come off on Monday nights. And if you don't go to every meeting, you have to make up a clavern meeting somewhere else. And if you miss too many, they just kick you out. It was bad timing on Steve King's part. Less violent. At least he didn't say nonviolent civilization. Apparently, there's only so much lying that Steve King can do. And he didn't quite have the nerve to say this civilization, if indeed we can call it a civilization, is not violent. Oh, for heaven's sakes. And of course, to the extent that there is any violence in that region, much of it is, of course, the violence of poverty. not the violence. Because the inherent bias, the inherent bigotry, the inherent racism, the inherent culturism inside what Steve King says there is that people of Hispanic descent are more violent than people of white Anglo-Saxon Protestant descent. Or at least white Anglo-Saxon descent. Yeah, see, Marty begins to see the conundrum. Wait, which is the more civilized and which is the less civilized? Wait, revised question. Which is the more violent and which is the less violent? Yeah. More for Meet the Feebles. Strawberry Fields Forever Poisoned. Paperback writer of hate books. That must be... That probably segues into Michelle from Alkin. Love Me Do in the Right Wing Bathroom. Imagine all the people who we hate are in hell. Sorry, Bob. Just can't stop. Your fault. You started it. Good thoughts to all. Signed, Granny T in Tennessee. Imagine all the people who we hate are in hell. Oh, I think we've got something we can work on. Juanita writing in, are you aware that Steve King is one in about 27 Congress members with just a high school education? It's not that I'm a snob about education, but there is nothing in his background that makes him qualified for government. He has no history of advocacy, charity, or volunteerism in his repertoire. I'll bet he's against affirmative action. Don't bet. You'll lose, because he is. Nobody's going to take the bet that he's not against affirmative action, Juanita. Marty, we need Dean Wormer to command you. Out with it! Talking about Michael's song title. I don't know. I don't think we've got enough votes yet. I wish they would just get their bigotry straight. One minute, they're lazy Mexicans. And the next minute, they're hyper-violent, I don't know, clockwork orange in Spanish types, you know, doing a little of the old ultra-violence. God. The Titanic brain. That are involved here. Oh, too hard to do that. Beginning to wear down, beginning to get tired. Oh, but Richmond, that was where Steve King had 65 people showed up who refused to be on camera. The Old Dominion, Virginia. For eons now, Norfolk, Virginia, over on the Atlantic seaboard, Atlantic coast. Think Progress broke a story. That arose from a 22-year-old woman reporting a sexual assault in Norfolk. The Virginian pilot online, Patrick Wilson, reporting that a rape victim came in and was strictly not believed by the victim. And since they didn't believe the victim, they closed the file and didn't pursue him. Why? Oh, by the way, the woman was raped on April 26, 2012 in East Ocean View, and the individual who was charged with it just happens to be a diagnosed serial rapist and sexual sadist. He followed her home. He raped her. And the female rape investigator for the police department there in Norfolk said, if we find out that you're lying, this will be a felony charge. If you bring more violent people into a less violent civilization, So, actually, Steve King could be arguing that in immigration should be increased because this is an awfully damned violent nation. And sometimes, it's violence that we just look the other way at. Because it turns out that the man who raped this woman pleaded guilty. On May the 31st, he was sentenced to 36 years in prison. He left DNA traces that were positive matches. That was just on one of the rapes that he was sentenced. He's still awaiting sentencing on the rape that he perpetrated on April 26, 2012. And we still aren't at the crux of the story. The official city policy of the Norfolk, Virginia Police Department, up until last week, said that all rape cases all rape allegations were to be treated as untrue by default. As the woman a year and a half ago went through the process of reporting the rape, she had to submit herself to a deeply humiliating physical exam, to the gathering of DNA evidence. And probably the most shocking and saddening part of this story is that she acted immediately. There are untold rapes that happen in this country where the woman traumatized does not seek immediate redress for the crime perpetrated against her. She waits. She waits a day. She waits a week. Because in many instances, the woman is worried about how she will be perceived. And she is, as noted, traumatized, perhaps in shock, perhaps driven into some form of post-traumatic stress disorder psychosis. This woman in Norfolk, Virginia, went immediately to the police, where they subjected her to the physical examination, the rape kit. Remember the right wing woman in Texas who said that would prevent pregnancy? They got these things in emergency rooms called rape kits. After the rape kit was run, the detectives came back in and said, you're telling us a different story than you told the other detectives. This only happened hours ago. Why can't you remember? They really said that to a woman who had just been raped. No adverb necessary. No violently, no brutally. A woman had just been raped, and the cops looked at her and says, this just happened a little bit ago. Why the hell can't you remember it? Why are you telling a different story, honey? And they were treating her that way because it was the stated public policy of Norfolk, Virginia to protect the rapist and not the rape victim. So this week, Norfolk Police Chief Mike Goldsmith declared there will be changes with the policy towards sexual assault victims in Norfolk. And police are hereafter to presume that women who have been raped are telling the truth about the rape. Because really, go on and holler and rape when you've been raped. It's not something you do for sport. It's not lighthearted. It is not easy. And odds are, after the rape, it will be a very long time before you forget the rape. And I hope, I'm not trying to trigger anyone, anything for anyone. But again, like I said with Steve King, it's not Steve King, it's the number of people who think, you know, he's right. That's the thing that more and more gives me pause. That policy did not come into existence like Athena springing formed from the head of Zeus. Laws don't make themselves. Policies are not self-generating. Someone in a position of power in Norfolk, Virginia, put in place this policy that said rape victims were to be treated as liars. They closed her file. So somewhere in Norfolk, Virginia, are people in power who think, what, that women who get raped have it coming? That women don't really understand what rape really means? And then this. Organizations like police departments seldom come up with their policies by themselves. Just as there is ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, to write legislation for right-wing legislatures all over the country, there are police organizations that produce policy. I would be deeply surprised to find out that Norfolk came up with this by themselves. So that leads to the inexorable question, all right, how many other police departments across the United States also have policies that say that the woman is probably lying about the rape? Because I think the statistical likelihood that Norfolk, Virginia is the only one probably is approaching absolute mathematical zero. Be afraid. Be very afraid. It's about 10 minutes before the hour, time to blow on out of here. Beth, we closed on this topic last night, and I want to close on it again. Because the rules of primacy and recency say that what people hear first and hear last are the things that they tend to remember. This comes from, it's a Harvey Wasserman article from Counterpunch that Beth posted on my Facebook page, and you can go and find it on my Facebook page if we're friends. No, I think it's an open page. You can probably just go there. It is datelined today, Harvey Wasserman's story. The Fukushima nightmare gets worse. Just when it seemed things might be under control at Fukushima, we find out they are worse than ever. Immeasurably worse. Massive quantities of radioactive liquids are now flowing through the shattered reactor site into the Pacific Ocean, and their makeup is far more lethal than the mere tritium that has dominated the headlines to date. I think it's a little bit unfair to say that any headlines have been dominated, but that's me. TEPCO, the owner-operator and one of the world's biggest and most technologically advanced electric utilities, has all but admitted it cannot control the situation. Its shoddy performance has prompted former U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commissioner Dale Klein to charge, "You don't know what you are doing." Japanese government is stepping in, but there's no guarantee or even likelihood it will do any better. In fact, there's no certainty as to what's causing this out-of-control flow of death and destruction. Some 16 months after 3 of the 6 reactors exploded at the Fukushima Daiichi site, nobody can offer a definitive explanation of what is happening there or how to deal with it. Hell, we don't even know what the death toll is. The most cogent speculation now centers on the reality that, simply enough, water flows downhill, or as any plumber will tell you, water seeks its own level. Aside from its location in an earthquake-prone tsunami zone, Fukushima Daiichi was sited above a major aquifer. That critical reality has been missing from nearly all discussion of the accident since it occurred. There can be little doubt at this point that the water in that underground lake has been thoroughly contaminated. In the wake of the March 11, 2011 disaster, TEPCO led the public to believe that it had largely contained the flow of contaminated water into the Pacific. But now it admits that not only was that a lie, but that the quantities of water involved, apparently some 400,000 gallons per day, are very large. Some of that water may be flowing from the aquifer. Much of it also, simply enough, flows down Japan's steep hillsides through the site and into the sea. Until now, the utility and regulatory authorities have assured an anxious planet that the contaminants in the water have been primarily tritium. Tritium is a relatively simple isotope with an 8-day half-life. Its health effects can be substantial, but its short half-life has been used to proliferate the illusion that it's not much to worry about. Reports now indicate the outflow at Fukushima also includes substantial quantities of radioactive iodine, cesium, and strontium. That, in turn, indicates there is probably more we haven't yet heard about. This, Harvey Wasserman writes, is very bad news. Iodine-31 can be ingested into the thyroid, where it emits beta particles that damage tissue. A plague of damaged thyroids has already been reported among as many as 40% of the children in the Fukushima area. That percentage can only go higher. In children, it stunts physical and mental growth. Among adults, it causes a very wide range of ancillary ailments, including cancer. Strontium-90's half-life is around 29 years. It mimics calcium and goes to our bones. Nice. By the way, with the anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it's worth noting that the radioactive output of Fukushima has been vastly higher than both of those bombs combined. The fallout from Fukushima, estimated at 20 to 30 times as high as the 1945 bombings at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And as Mr. Wasserman writes, the dominant reality is this. There is absolutely no indication how or when this lethal outflow will stop. They know it's not slowing down. They don't know how fast it is accelerating. Read the article. Pay attention. It is a dangerous and frightening world in which we live. Not made dangerous or frightening by you or me, but by the people who say, yeah, but what about the quarterly profit and loss statements? What about the shareholders? What about the CEO? Remind me, there's a story from a congressman about the price of a McDonald's hamburger that got me thinking along a different line. Help me remember tomorrow that I want to discuss that, please. Because it kind of goes to the heart of the matter. All right, the votes are in. I've counted them. Time to bail out. And this is from Michael's list of Meet the Featles tracks. Also, this is from the Blah album. And he says, especially in light of the fact that it's, you know, Rick Santorum in Meet the Featles, or in the Featles. Baraki the Coon. Rocky Raccoon. Yeah. Somewhere out there, I can hear mad giggling. Because, you know, they are that hateful, the right wing. So it's time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, all of you who kicked in last night and who continue to contribute to keep this on the air. I promise you, we're doing all we can on this end to keep it on the air. Thank you. We're not quite done with, we're not done by, no, we are not done. But we took $200 bite out of a $400 evening. So tomorrow it's just $350 unless more comes in overnight. We can do this. Thank you. And thank you very much to Bob in Baltimore. And thank you to Philip. And everyone who responded to the challenge. Thank you. It does make things a little bit simpler. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow night, remember. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox, and thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AcheAct.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is on the way on the horn.